this past Monday, as I was driving in my car, I was glad to realize I was about to hear the program Fresh Air on NPR. And that day, Terry Gross was interviewing Elton John. You may have seen the movie Rocket Man that came out earlier this year. Elton says that that's his fantasy of his life story. But he's just published a new memoir of his life called Me. And so Terry had him on the show to ask him some questions about what he writes in the book. Elton said that his mother and his grandmother took his side when it became more and more clear that his passion and his love and his gift was music. But all of his life, even years later, when he was a world-famous rock star, his father never came to any of his shows. His father never said, "Well done," never gave his blessing. So Elton says he realizes he began striving at a really early age to try to make his father proud. You may remember that when he was in his early 20s, he became engaged to one of his women friends, Linda. He said, "That's what was done. I presumed I was supposed to marry a woman." But one of his friends, John, helped him to see and to know himself better. He said, "Elton, you can't marry Linda. You're gay." Elton said it was an epiphany. It was such a relief to him to know more about who he was and to have a name and to be seen. He says that all of his life he's been shy and chubby and had low esteem. And so he began to turn to drugs and to overeat and to binge drink scotch, off and on for about 20 years or more. Then he spent a week with Ryan White in Indianapolis when Ryan was dying. Ryan, you may remember, was one of the early well-known people to die of AIDS. He was a hemophiliac, and as a teenager, when he received a transfusion of blood which he needed, he contracted the disease. No one knew at that time how the disease was transmitted. And Elton says that every day that week, as he left Ryan in the hospital and went back to his hotel room, he noticed that he was complaining about everything. The wallpaper, the furniture, the food. He says his behavior was reprehensible and he was ashamed. He marveled at Ryan and his family. They were ostracized by the community because of Ryan's illness. But Ryan never complained. He never complained about having AIDS. He never complained about how the community was behaving toward him. He never complained when he knew he was dying. Elton saw that his family forgave everyone. They had no hate in them. Being with Ryan and his family that week, Elton began to wonder, what kind of person have I become? Six months after Ryan died, Elton checked himself into a rehab program at a general hospital in Chicago. He was 43. He was ready to leave everything behind and to do whatever he had to do to get well. At one point, though, when he was wrestling with the demands of the program, he packed his suitcase and he left. He didn't go very far. He sat down on the stairs of the hospital and began crying. He said to himself, "What are you doing? Where are you going to run to now and keep behaving like this?" He went back. He stretched himself more than he knew he could. He learned he needed to have humility to get sober. He listened and he listened and he listened in the group therapy sessions. Until now, he thought he was the only one wrestling with addictions. Now, he didn't feel alone anymore. And he knew he needed to not give up until he was well. He almost left rehab when it was time in the program for what he calls the God talk. He told Terry Gross the God thing. "I was angry. God for me represented punishment. God will punish you for doing this. God will punish you for doing that. I hated the word God." Then someone said to him, "Listen, do you believe in something greater than yourself?" "Of course I do. There have been so many things in my life that have happened by chance or decisions I've made that have been prompted by something inside my soul. I only have to look up in the sky to believe in something greater than myself, or walk in a field, or look at a mountain." "Well then, that's it. Use it. Say higher power instead of God." It made sense to Elton. He could feel something shifting in him. I could hear it in his voice. "I can do that. I can do that. It doesn't have to be the punishing God I learned about in Sunday school. It can be a higher power that sends me messages." And I accepted that. I came to terms with that. That was really very important to me. He says, "I hated my addiction. I hated the way I behaved. I hated how I treated people. I hated who I'd become. But I am grateful I had the addiction, because then I learned how to become who I am now. I'm proud of who I am now. I like who I am. Elton, like each of us, had God's blessing from the very beginning, every day. Yet, as is part of each person's life, he felt separated from that love, from that blessing. He headed out into the world striving to acquire that blessing. His wrestling lasted through a long night of 20 years or more. And then the daybreak arrived in the faces and lives of Ryan White and his family. And in the faces and voices and suffering and stories of the people he met in rehab. He received a new name, no longer Elton Alone, Elton Unlovable, but now the one with company, the one who is seen and known and accepted, the one who is blessed beyond measure. Jacob, with his mother Rebecca's assistance, has deceived his blind, dying father, Isaac. He pretended he was his older brother, Esau, so that he could receive the blessing intended for the oldest son. When Esau learns what has happened, that the blessing meant for him has been stolen from him, he wants to kill his brother. So Jacob flees for his life. He journeys through the wilderness, heading to the land of his uncle Laban. One night along the way, when he's asleep, he receives a dream from God, a vision. He sees angels moving along a stairway from earth to heaven, from heaven to earth. God speaks to Jacob to give him the same blessing that was given to his grandfather Abraham and to his father Isaac. And God adds to the blessing, I am with you and will keep you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to this land. Jacob, the supplanter, the deceiver, the trickster. Jacob, who betrays the trust of his father and his brother and his family, is met by God and offered God's presence and protection. Jacob realizes he is in the house of God here in the middle of the wilderness. He's at the gateway of heaven. About 20 or more years go by. Jacob has worked for his uncle. He's married his cousins Leah and Rachel. They have many children. He has countless flocks and is very prosperous. But then when his son with Rachel, Joseph, is born, he hears that it's time for him to go back. Back to the land of his family. Going back home means that he will have to face Esau. He is afraid of what may happen when he sees Esau. Does Esau still hate him and want to kill him? So he takes his time to plan carefully for their meeting, taking as many precautions as he can. As he and his family begin the journey, he sends many of his flocks out ahead of them as a peace offering to Esau. The night before he is to meet his brother, Jacob takes his wives and children and all that he owns across to the other side of the stream and then goes back again to have time alone to prepare to pray. But Jacob does not rest that night. Someone comes to him in the dark of the night and wrestles with him all night long. No matter how tired he is, Jacob does not let go. They wrestle, they struggle, they wrestle, they struggle. Finally, as the dawn is approaching, the stranger puts Jacob's hip out of its socket, and he asks Jacob to let him go. But Jacob says, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." The wrestler asks Jacob, "What is your name?" Jacob tells him, and the man replies, "Jacob will now have a new name. He will no longer be called Jacob, which means the one who supplants. He is now to be named Israel, the one who strives with God, the one who wrestles with God." And before the wrestler goes, he blesses Jacob, Israel. And now Jacob realizes he has been wrestling with God. He has seen God face to face. He will never be the same again. He is transformed. He understands that this place, too, is the place that is God's house. He thought it was up to him to work hard to acquire his blessing. He thought he had to do anything and everything a person has to do to become worthy of blessing and promise. But now he knows the blessing giver in his body, in his hip, and every fiber of his being. He has seen the blessing giver face to face. He will carry a reminder of their blessing, their night of wrestling throughout all of his life. Each one of us is also one who wrestles, one who strives with God. It's part of being here, being human. We strive to be accepted, to be in control, to be safe, to be loved, to be enough. God, our Creator, our blessing giver, our protector, our beloved, knows this about us. And over time, after many nights of wrestling, over years, the daybreak comes when the wrestling gives way to glimpsing ourselves seeing ourselves as God sees us and has known us. Recognizing God's welcome and delight. Seeing as God sees the beauty and the dignity of our beings and our souls. Love and blessing are the fruits of the wrestling. Jan Richardson offers us this Jacob's blessing. If this blessing were easy, anyone could claim it. As it is, I am here to tell you that it will take some work. This is the blessing that visits you in the struggling, in the wrestling, in the striving. This is the blessing that comes after you have left everything behind, after you have stepped out, after you have crossed into that realm beyond every landmark you have ever known. This is the blessing that takes all night to find. It's not that this blessing is so difficult, as if it were not filled with grace or with the love that lives in every line. It's simply that it requires you to want it, to ask for it, to place yourself in its path. It demands that you stand to meet it when it arrives, that you stretch yourself in ways you didn't know you could move, that you agree to not give up. So when this blessing comes, born in the hands of the difficult angel who has chosen you, do not let go. Give yourself into its grip. It will wound you, but I tell you, there will come a day when what felt to you like limping was something more like dancing, as you moved into the cadence of your new and blessed name.